Hi everyone, welcome to On The Box, the Geek Show's dedicated television podcast where we talk about television like, I don't know, farmers talk about cows or something like that. Anyway, I am Rob, and joining me today are the amazing people over there. Who are you people?
I don't know, who are we?
Well, if you can't tell anybody.
I completely had a brain fart. I was going to make some kind of funny joke, I had a brain fart.
I've got an existential crisis now. Who are we? What is this? What is going on?
Okay, I am joined.
Why is it only my voice people are hearing?
I am joined by Andrew.
I'm that one.
And Andy.
Yes, that's my name.
And Rob.
I could be anything you want me to be.
Do not change that bit. bit is not getting changed.
No, I am not. Anyhow, we are.
Wait, so does that mean you could finally be a competent editor?
Yeah, that'd be a thing, wouldn't it? on the Geek Show podcast network, we have a family of podcasts going from everything from TV, like you're listening to now with On The Box, to movies, comic books, anime, all sorts, literally all sorts. We even have a main show when that happened. But if you want to support us, head over to social networking channels. You can find us just by searching for The Geek Show and looking for our amusing avatar. Share us with your friends. That's a great way to support us, or if not, well, just share us with your friends. That is the best way to support the podcast and
just
help it.
Just like more. Drugs.
Yes. If you charge your friends to listen to this podcast, you're doing particularly well, but we've got to distance ourselves from that. But, you know, whatever you want to do with drugs or podcasts, it's entirely up to you.
That took a bad turn.
Well,
if they charge their friends to listen to the podcast, they make more money off of this than we do.
Yeah, no, we're gonna have to have a cut, be sort of big daddy dealer. We'll be big daddy podcast dealer, and we'll be fine.
Yes.
How is that for blurb, Rob? How is that for blurb?
That was good blurb. That was very good blurb. You are good. You are good at blurbing all over the place. On with the news then. So, what have we got in the news?
Well, first up, we have yet another bit of sad news.
Oh.
Because 2016 is officially like the worst year ever.
Yes, yes, it is.
Robert Vaughn has passed away.
What? The man from Uncle?
Yeah, by
Napoleon Solo is dead.
Yeah. How? That's what I said.
Otherwise known by the human name as Robert Vaughn. You have to reduce everything to TV shows, Rob. Yeah, you're so vulgar.
Well, we are a TV show.
Yeah, it is sad.
I think from now on, we should definitely avoid talking about TV shows on this podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, it's bad taste. But yeah, he made a comeback in his later life, didn't he, with that TV show on BBC One.
Hustle.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, and then it spawned like a show that was after that called The Real Hustle. You know, he had still was making impact later on in his career, like it went to his 70s.
Oh yeah.
And allegedly he was still doing his own stunts in his 70s, you know what I mean? I'm not talking like Jackie Chan style stuff, but still.
Yeah.
Stunts is stunts.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
A lot of people remember him mainly, though, for his role in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Yeah, him and David McCallum, the pair of them, just basically made 60s American spy TV. They made it fun. They made it accessible. Where over here we had James Bond, they had The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And it was a great
Wasn't
show.
Mission Impossible around the same sort of time, too, the TV
The original
show.
Mission Impossible. But the original Mission Impossible was all kind of super serious, but The Man from U.N.C.L.E. was quite tongue-in-cheek. And I think Get Smart was from around the same time as well. The original Get Smart.
Yeah. It's been a real doo-doo head of a year, 2016, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of people, icons, it'd be even pointless sort of listing them at this point, phase, because there's just been so many. And, you know, you've forgotten half of them by this point, just because it's always another week passes and somebody else, you know, near and dear and legendary. Has been taken.
Yeah, we've got Alan Rickman, David Bowie, the entire American political system.
Yep.
Yeah. What worries me though is the footprint. Well, not the footprint so much. The hole it's going to leave, because you know we've had these legendary people who've made art and culture what it is, and without them, what do we have left?
Well,
they leave a gaping
really.
Chasm. You know?
They do. I mean, was it towards the end of last week or the beginning of this week? Leonard Cohen died.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. Who steps up and takes that mantle? There's nobody at all. It's sad. It's just it's not just as sad as them passing away, but as people who enjoy watching stuff and experiencing stuff, there's positions that'll never be filled by these people passing because they're all truly, you know, one of a kind.
Yeah, and maybe that's one of the reasons why we've started putting so much store into you know, the directors, the people behind the camera, that sort of thing, rather than the actors and those sorts of people. I mean, J.K. Rowling, if you look at her in terms of the books, most people treat her as quite disposable. She's not going to be another J.R.R. Tolkien, is she?
I don't know.
The amount of times we've argued, well, talked out of J.K. Rowling on Literary Lifing, we can safely say she's not going to be a J.R.R. Tolkien.
What, J.R.? Oh, hang on. Mr. Lord of the Rings man's overrated anyway. All he does is ramble for 1,000 pages about how they walked a bit. Yeah. And then does like 10 pages of, then they had a really interesting battle. And then 1,000 pages of they walked a bit.
That's not fair, Rob. You forgot about the part where they all have a nice sing-song in Elvish.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
And they're like 7 meals.
I have a challenge for Mr. Tolkien, wherever he is now. Write a strong female character. There you go.
Yeah, he wasn't good at that either.
And if anything, in more recent years, it's only got worse.
Oh, God.
Oh. So anyway, moving on then, shall we?
Yeah, to a brighter bit of news next is that David Mitchell and Robert Webb are reuniting for a new sitcom on Channel 4.
Yeah.
And it's with Sam Blackwell, who was either the writer or the director for Peep Show, is a thing I should have looked at before starting the story. But it's fine, because I'm just going to keep talking and then realise that the story... Yeah, I think he's like the main writer. So anyway, the new sitcom is called Back. It's going to be a 6-part series about a guy who has to go back and kind of take over his father's pub with his foster brother, with the son being David Mitchell, foster brother being Robert Webb. I assume hijinks ensue.
That might be...
Yeah, I'm about to make a really big admission here. I've never seen a single episode of Peep Show.
Really?
Not a single one.
Well, I've only seen a few of them, Rob, and... What I noticed with it, what I seemed to like about it was more in like a first-person type of camera from what I took to it.
Well, that is the entire selling point you've got there, Andy, which is pretty common knowledge at this point.
You know what? The other day I watched that The Walking Dead program, and just something I noticed is there seemed to be a fair few zombies in it.
Yep.
Keep that to yourself, though. If it gets out, people might go, you know... like it. It might become popular or something.
Oh, who wouldn't want that to happen? Then it might go on for far too many seasons and become creatively dead.
That'd be the worst thing for everybody. That would.
But luckily that will never happen.
Yes.
Yeah, the reason I never took to it, though, is it's always seemed like one of those slightly pretentious Channel 4 comedies, because they do have a habit of being a little bit... Well, they swerve a little bit to that edge of things.
I guess, yeah, if you haven't seen it, you can make that assumption, but Peep Show is kind of the exact opposite of a pretentious comedy.
Okay.
It's like pretty much just the filthiest toilet jokes ever seen on TV.
Well, I wouldn't have pictured that to say it, because when you look at them two, Robert Webb, hang on, is it Robert Webb? It is, isn't it? Yeah. Am I mixing them up again? Yeah, Robert Webb, because the other one's named after an author, but not the same person. But anyway, Robert Webb, I get that from him, but they seem to have sort of separated because they are, I mean, that's probably the gag in the show, but they're two very, very different people.
Yeah, that is absolutely the point.
Yeah, Robert Webb is sort of, you know, very dirty talking, and David Mitchell's basically, he is your archetypical middle-class guy.
So he's Andrew?
No, he's David Mitchell. Stupid Rob.
It's fine, no. Rob's old, he gets confused.
He thinks all white people look alike. It's terrible. We do, but, you know, it's a different matter altogether. yeah, I can see exactly how this is going to work. It is going to be pretty much the same thing as Peep Show, but in a different circumstance. So one is the sort of the guy who's come from, like, sort of better work of life, and the other one's been in the pub all of his life and worked in it all of his life, and there's the fish out of water aspect there. You can see how it's going to work.
Oh, yeah, and then they argue over something. Bad stuff happens.
There has to be some sort of disagreement, or it'll be quite a boring comedy, sitcom-y type show.
Look at Mrs. Brown's Boys.
Yep.
No conflict in that. It's just the man dressed as a woman saying, feck a lot. And that's it.
Yeah.
I do enjoy watching that, though.
We know.
Just stop it while you're ahead, because the more you say, the worse it gets for you, Andy.
Yeah, but this is where we always have an argument.
No, just stop. Just stop. You're ahead. You've lost no ground. The more you say, the deeper the hole gets.
Just tackle him and take the shovel.
Shall we move on? Any other news then?
Nope, that's it.
We've got the news about the Grand Tour, but it's not mainly new.
Well, it's just more about the amount of money that's been thrown behind it and like Amazon. Apparently, it's about £4.5 million per episode.
Which is a ridiculous amount just to make TV.
When you look at like sort of the amount of people who are going to be exposed to it, I think it was announced that like Netflix had 5 million subscribers, which was four times more than what Amazon Prime have. So to throw that much money behind about a million subscribers, big risk.
Apparently, though, it's done it like right. It's not like Top Gear, but it's the same feel.
So it's a bunch of middle-aged asses messing about.
Innocent. As bad as that sounds.
I mean, I guess, because look at what a ridiculous large audience Top Gear used to have.
Yeah, and
that amount of money is slightly justified because there's a good chance it's going to rake in a lot of that audience.
They will have to do a pretty good sort of awareness campaign, because people will be like, can I watch Amazon Prime on TV? Many people won't realise it's a subscription service, so they'll have to make a lot of people aware of that. But once that is done, I reckon it's going to make money hand over fist for Amazon Prime.
Oh, it's just been released.
Like, imagine you're trying to explain to Rob how the internet works.
I thought it was just a box with a red light on.
It's green.
Is it a green light now?
Yes.
It used to be red.
You can actually use your phone now, Rob, when you're on the internet.
Really?
You can use your watch as well.
When did this happen?
Strange times.
So the elders and Big Ben had a big sit-down meeting about it.
I don't like those guys. Never let me attend the meetings.
I think that's about it for news, though. It's
a very dry week, or slow week.
Well, you were right the first time.
Okay, let's take a break there, then, and we'll be back in a moment.
Do you like books but can't handle too many words? Or prefer comics? Then tune in to the Geek Show's dedicated comic book show, 4Panel.
And welcome back to On The Box. Now we're going to be talking about what we've been watching. And Rob, since you're the special guest, why don't you start?
Yeah, Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 2. And I just want to mention how annoying it is. It's got to be streamed, shall we say. The fact that it's not broadcast in the UK at sort of a reasonable time within it being broadcast in America is something which really gets my goat.
But it is quite annoying, is a thing I imagine people without Virgin Media say.
Also, Virgin Media viewers get it. You scum.
Yeah. you can just like get it off the on-demand menu.
Oh, that's awesome.
But anyway, I digress. I think you got to say a little bit of season one, because it doesn't really make a great deal of sense to just sort of jump into it off the back. But season one ended with Ash taking the easy way out, because obviously it's Ash. You know, he doesn't want to expend too much effort. So he goes back to Jacksonville, which is sort of his mecca for some reason. The place where everything's good, where everything's easy, and you just sort of relax, getting drunk with Paco and other girl whose name I've completely forgotten. Oops.
It is Kelly.
Yes,
I know,
because
I kept forgetting it as well.
So, yeah, and season one finished like that. Season two starts, and obviously it's Ash vs. the Evil Dead, so things can't stay in a state of, happy equilibrium for long. So Ruby, the big bad from the second season, is now an ally, but a questionable ally. And the whole point of this season is building up to what's happened in the past couple of episodes, which is effectively the first true big bad of the series. A character called Baal, who basically plays with people's minds and affiliations and can go inside anybody's body and sort of manipulate them in that way. And I've got to say, I actually think it's better than the first season, because the first season, I don't think it had found what it was yet. It was basically just, let's go from here to there and let's just kill some stuff, which is fun.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, the first season was kind of just like getting your favourite toys back and just wanting to do whatever with them.
Oh, yeah, totally. And the second season, right, we've done that. So what do we do now? How do we keep this going? And it's done some really interesting things. It has like ideas of the book being more than just a book, and it affects characters. And my favourite episode of the season, I can't remember which number it is, but it's when the car, Ash's Oldsmobile, gets possessed.
It's like I want to say fourth episode,
something like that. It's middle of the season. But Christine's a very famous killer car movie. This is like Christine if it was a horrible, nasty gore movie.
It sounds amazing.
And there's other bits as well. It's not just all sort of silly violence. I mean, I will say one thing. Ash, Bruce Campbell as Ash, is brilliant. I mean, I listened to a podcast where he said about halfway into the season, he sprained his ankle pretty bad. So he's done like most of the season on a knackered foot.
Wow.
So on one aspect, fair play. But on another, he's just brilliant. As Ash, the one-liners are so good.
It's like you could not tell at all, like that he's got a bad ankle or anything like that.
Oh no, he's going on like a trooper. But it's also got like some really nice emotional episodes. There's a bit where he, as the season starts and sort of leading up into the bit with the killer car, he meets his dad, who is played by names.
Police Elvis.
No, but it's not the first last time Elvis will pop. Lee Majors.
Lee Majors is his dad.
Yeah. You've mentioned this on the show before. I don't know why you're surprised.
Literally, I told you that a few weeks ago.
Dab.
And you had the exact same reaction.
But the way that episode resolves, it was really sort of touching and beautiful, I thought. Because it was like horrible, violent, and spontaneous. But at the same time, it showed like vulnerability to the Ash character beyond just the stupid puns and one-liners, which are amazing, you know. And Ted Raimi, who basically appeared in the original films as the Shemp, which is what the Deadites were called, basically. The one that was kept in the basement.
Yeah.
But him as Chet is just the funniest thing in the season two. He's got a drink, which he's got... Well, he's basically put ketamine in it, and he's got an unbroadcastable name. But he's great fun. And, it's great fun. I mean, it's like an extension of Army of Darkness, but it's put it in the modern day, so there's much more to be done and much more potential, and the money and the effects that they can afford it are better. And like most recent episode and the one that's going to be broadcast this coming Sunday has Ash in an insane asylum. And, you know, you usually have these episodes in these sort of fantasy or horror shows where one character says, "It's all a dream. You imagined it all." It's kind of become a cliche at this point from when Buffy did it years ago. But in this, to see that sort of battling it out with Ash's ego is really, really fun episode, I thought. And it introduces the puppet, Ashy Slashy, which is just great as well. But overall, I think it's just great. It's like half an hour as well. You know, that's really put to bed sort of a lot of the concerns that how can you make that thing 45 minutes in like a 12-episode season. This is like really, really good stuff. I like it a hell of a lot.
Yeah, I really like it as well.
I've never give that a watch. It is supposed to be absolutely brilliant.
It's insanely violent, though.
It is. I kind of love how, like, everyone, like, all over the internet, you see all these, ooh, has The Walking Dead gone too far this week? Meanwhile, Ash is, like, literally shoving his head up the rear end of a deadite.
He does. It's impossible to watch.
But you didn't stop.
But it's great. It is really fun. Yes.
I'm going to have to catch up.
Evil Dead Season 2.
I haven't watched Season 2 yet. I'm going to have to catch up.
Yeah, it's better than Season 1 by a good way, I think.
Cool.
Right. Yeah, I've been watching something not on the TV this week.
Okay.
And it's the box set I bought a few weeks ago of the classic sitcom now, Good Night, Sweetheart.
Oh, the one with Nicholas Lyndhurst.
Yes. I watched the new one a few months ago that they did for the sitcom. And I'm thinking, I forgot how good it actually was. So I bought the box set. It was only £15 on Amazon
for
the full six series. And it's absolutely brilliant. Basically, for anybody that hasn't seen it, Gary Sparrow, who's played by Nicholas Lyndhurst, he starts off as a TV repairman. And I have to watch how I say this. But every time Gary Sparrow goes down Ducklet's Passage, he ends...
Doesn't matter how you say it, Andy. It's funny anyway.
I know. he goes into 1940s London, and due in the middle of the World War II and the Blitz to start off with. And he starts to have an affair through the two time zones. So technically, it's not really having an affair, since both of them really don't exist in the exact same time.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, eh?
Yes, but this one is whatever happens in 1940, well, stays in 1940.
Okay.
And vice versa. But anyway, throughout the full series...
Andy,
yeah?
Did you just excuse all the Nazis? Like, you just excused all the Nazi war crime.
You monster. Digging you out of that one, Andy.
I don't... Well, there's no comeback for that one.
No, not really.
I That's not fair, Andrew. That was super cruel.
I will say, though, like, just to help you a little bit, it is showing on yesterday as well with their like a schedule of sort of classic sitcoms like Porridge and whatnot. And you know what? It still holds up, but it's very much a 1990s sitcom.
Oh, yeah. It shows, I mean, it is time. I think, considering the title, I think it is timeless, even though it has aged quite a bit. But throughout the full series, how the story developed, you get loads of different unique episodes. For example, one that really stands out was when he accidentally time travels 50 years the other way from 1940s and finds out Jack the Ripper has been travelling through the same time portal, and that's why they never caught him.
Is this sci-fi? Because this sounds like sci-fi.
Oh, yeah, it's sci-fi. He travels through time.
And you said this is a sitcom, right?
Yeah.
And not sure about him chasing Jack the Ripper through time.
Oh, no, he gets hit by a bus. That's why they never found him. He gets hit by the bus in 1996 London, or 1997 London.
I remember that episode.
Weird.
No, it is a weird sitcom.
I do recommend anybody. I mean, it's only £15 on Amazon, and no doubt you can watch the episodes on the TV.
You can also buy it on other stockists, other than Amazon. Mm. They do exist.
Well, yes, we have to be quite fair, don't we? So, yeah, other retailers. But anyway, it is a really good sitcom, and I do recommend it. And also the episode where somebody comes from, I think it was 2026 or something like that, and Ron, who is Gary's mate, sells him the full lot of the stock of his shop that he has on credit. So this individual goes back to the future, and then somebody comes along from the future and closes the time portal, so he loses all of his stock. It's absolutely hilarious.
I thought Red Dwarf was supposed to be the sort of the fancy, you know, high concept sci-fi comedy, you know.
Thing is, Goodnight Sweetheart came around, was it around the same time, Andy?
It's Red Dwarf?
Yeah.
Roughly, yeah, 93 till 99, I think.
Yeah, it was when
Red Dwarf was around much before that. It was like 88, 89.
Yeah, but that was the, I'd have said, the height of Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
93, because that was when they won the Emmy, Red Dwarf, I think, 93.
I think so, yeah. Because Goodnight Sweetheart was the show that basically, it moved Nicholas Lyndhurst out from under the shadow of Only Fools and Horses, and pretty much defined him for whatever he did afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, and I do have to mention as well, though.
Yeah.
One of the major recurring storylines, well, gags that throughout the show is he travels back to 1940 to 1945, depending on what series you watch, and basically rips off songs from the future and says he written them.
Yeah.
And he becomes this, known for his writing and recording on some songs and things like that. So that's always really funny.
That's a really complicated time loop. I'm not going to even go into the mechanics of that because that's some head-battering stuff. That's hard sci-fi stuff, that is.
When you started this with Nicholas Lyndhurst plays a TV repairman, this is not at all where I thought we were ending up.
Well, it's because of his constant trips down Duckett's Passage, you know. it's enough to bend anyone's mind.
I hope he asks Duckett.
Nah, I think he just went there.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's two-timing in two different time zones as well.
So I have been watching kind of Netflix's newest big thing, which is season 3 of Black Mirror.
Ooh.
And it has been a very mixed bag.
Really?
Yeah. I think probably the best way to do this, because there's only 6 episodes, is kind of just go through them.
Yeah.
Because each one's quite different. So, Episode 1 was called Noah's Dive, and it's about a world where basically everything is controlled by social media rankings.
Okay.
So kind of how popular you are determines how good your job is, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think the main problem is it's not a great choice for first episode, because this one was actually written by Rashida Jones, the actress, and one of the writers from Parks and Recreation, whose name I've forgotten. So it feels very different to kind of the older Black Mirror episodes.
Yeah.
And that just makes it feel a bit weird.
Not as dark and acerbic as Charlie Brooker's stuff.
No, it's got this very, like, looks quite lighthearted and fluffy.
Yeah, yeah.
With the idea of being, look how kind of superficially happy everything is. And it makes it a bit weird. Plus it has the same problem as a lot of the new episodes have, where because they're on Netflix now, they've gone from being 45 minutes to being an hour long. And there's just like, there's not really enough storyline to justify a whole hour, and quite a bit of it really drags on.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about social media rankings and everything like that, it sounds like, do you guys remember this thing called Clout from a few years ago? Your Clout score, they reckoned it was going to be the next big thing. It was integrating various social networks and finding out just how influential you were on the internet and giving you a score out of 100. So someone like Obama, they gave a Clout score of 99 to, and I don't know, someone like Justin Bieber, because
when they gave someone like Ye like a 1.
I never joined it, but it's the kind of thing that sounds good on paper, but it quickly died.
Doesn't Clout mean to just literally physically attack someone?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go with that version.
This is the thing.
Anyway, thanks for that input, guys. Episode 2 is called Playtest, and this one, like, I genuinely hated with every fiber of my being, because it's just this stupid thing. After about, like, 20 minutes of complete pointlessness, some guy goes to, like, a video games company to playtest a new virtual reality system, and it's a horror game, and basically, the entire episode is just a spooky thing pops out, but surprise, it's not real.
That's not much to maintain that episode. That sounds...
No, it's just like, it's really cheap jump scares.
Oh, dear.
Five Nights at Freddy's jump scares?
I mean, yeah, it pretty much is Five Nights at Freddy's, the episode.
Oh, sounds boring.
And then the ending, it does the whole, oh, he thinks it all over, but that was an illusion. And now it's really all over, but surprise, no, it isn't. Maybe it's over now. Nope, that was another illusion. And it's quite predictable and dull.
Good.
So we're going to stop talking about that one because it's stupid and I hate it and move on to episode 3, which is one of the two episodes I actually liked in this series. It's called Shut Up and Dance. It's basically about a guy who's being blackmailed by this mysterious group who recorded him while he was having some private fun time. And they're basically saying, you know, do what we say or we're going to send this footage to all of your friends. And it was like this really tensely written thriller. Like, it actually fit well into the hour. It has an absolutely brutal twist at the end. And I think it's one of the few episodes that actually felt like Black Mirror.
Okay.
Plus it has Jerome Flynn in it, and like every single one of his lines contains about 3 swear words, which is bad.
Yeah.
It also contains my favourite nickname for a person, Spurty Magoo.
What? Spurty Magoo?
Spurty Magoo.
That's like somebody off Rocky Races or something.
I don't know what Rocky Races you've been watching. So then we had the 4th episode, which is San Junipero. And on the internet, that's kind of like been the most popular episode. And I kind of get why, because it's about basically a world where you can transfer your consciousness into like a whole virtual world. It's this very heavily stylized version of 1980s America. And it's about 2 girls who meet and fall in love and have a relationship and what such. And it's not that it's a bad episode. It's just that it's like a really sentimental and sweet episode. And that's not Black Mirror. That's not Black Mirror in the slightest.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. Black Mirror is supposed to be disturbing. It's supposed to be
horrible. I want like overwhelmingly bleak and cynical stories about why people are the worst and will use technology to destroy our lives.
Yeah.
Then there was episode 5, which is Men Against Fire. And it was very meh. Meh is the word I would use.
Is it about firemen?
No, it's about soldiers who have kind of like neural implants that give them like an HUD and video game type thing, which helps them soldier about. But surprise, it turns out like the evil zombie monsters they're fighting are actually people, and the neural implants are making see them as monsters, which like is a thing you realize about 2 minutes in, and it doesn't really go anywhere from that.
Hmm.
That doesn't sound so average and middling. That just sounds incredibly stupid.
Yeah.
More than anything.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think the point is supposed to be like, oh, technology is making us desensitized to violence. But it's like, it's just such an obvious twist that it doesn't have any impact at all. But it's okay, because the final episode, Hated in the Nation, it's like probably one of my favorite Black Mirror episodes.
Okay.
It's like this kind of weird concept. this is set in the near future. Bees have gone extinct, so they make like robot bees to do the pollination for us. Only then someone hacks them and starts using them to assassinate people, with the twist being he's using like Twitter to hold votes on who should be killed next.
Okay.
And it's kind of just this really like smart look into how people use social media to like condemn other people without thinking there'll ever be any consequence.
Certainly different.
Well, yeah. It's the last episode sounds more like what Black Mirror should be.
Yeah, exactly. That is, you know, that is full on properly Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Plus, I think like this whole idea of like mob justice on social media, I think is a theme that's been in quite a few Black Mirror episodes. But I feel like when they've tried it before, it hasn't quite paid off as well as it could.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you.
Hated in the Nation is them finally like getting it right.
I kind of agree with you on that one. They weren't bad.
Plus, it's got Benedict Wong in it, and Benedict Wong is awesome.
True. Very true.
Yeah. It's a pity the wider world doesn't realise that, because he is incredibly underrated.
I mean, to be fair, he's been in Doctor Strange now, so that's going to boost his profile a fair bit.
Yeah.
He was in The Martian as well, but that was a smaller role, I think. Yeah, it appears that, you know, it's a bit too much for Charlie Brooker to, because its success is kind of completely out of his estimation. He's got to grow, he's got to have longer episodes, he's got to have more episodes. I think
the main problem with the series that, like, because they've doubled the amount of episodes and lengthened the time, they've had to bring in more writers, and so it's got quite diluted.
Whereas 45 minutes and 3 episodes a season and that one Christmas episode, it was as much as Charlie Brooker could handle and not an ounce more. It wasn't like doing it for like a spec to sell to like people. It was just a show that was on, and it was on its best on Channel 4 by the sound of it.
Yeah, I think because it was Charlie Brooker telling the stories he wanted to tell.
Yeah.
And like I can see in these episodes points where like some big shot American producer has gone, no, this isn't what we're having. We're going to do this. Like San Junipero, there's kind of this whole storyline that you can see, it's like the story Charlie Brooker wants to tell is about kind of, is it worth living forever, but living this really shallow, superficial life? But then that's kind of got pushed over to the side to go, look, lesbians being sad.
That sounds like a bit of a Hot Topic episode, to be honest. I'm not going to be...
I mean, I guess now it's like become especially a Hot Topic episode.
Yeah, I'm not being sort of confrontational, but the whole LGBT thing is very much in the news. It's in a lot of people's sort of social media feeds. It's been talked about a lot, whether it's something you support and, you know, have the pictures in your social media to show how much you support it or whether you hate it. It's everywhere nowadays. And that episode just feels like it's just, look.
We can do that too. Yeah, we understand
what this is.
Yeah, like part of me feels like maybe that's why it's become such a popular episode. Mm. It's maybe more having something to cling to rather than the actual substance of it.
Yeah.
That's a pity.
Yeah, it's a shame. But like, I mean, like I said, like two of the episodes are pretty okay. Oh, yes, a pity. Like they're pretty damn good.
One of them being the Spurty Magoo one.
Yes, Spurty Magoo and Hated in the Nation. Okay, Benedict Wong versus the Bees.
Okay, right, so my turn then, is it?
Yep.
And me, I have been watching Asian Provocateur, which is Ramesh Ranganathan's, how would you call it? Well, it's the second series, which is Mum's American Dream. The first series had Ramesh going back to Sri Lanka at the request of his mom and getting in touch with his roots. So he was doing things like getting a blessing and having to look after his 12-year-old cousin, learning the Sri Lankan martial art, which is Angapora or something like that. And then towards the end of the series, he was trying to perform in a Tamil drama, which was a dream of his mom's because she always wanted to be an actress. And then at the end, his mom went to Sri Lanka to find out, you know, how he was coping with it. And I'll be honest, it was hilarious because Ramesh Ranganathan is... Who is that guy? What's his name? Idiot Abroad.
Ah.
Carl Pilkington.
Carl Pilkington, accent. Right. Ramesh Ranganathan is basically a Sri Lankan Carl Pilkington, only with a lot more intelligence and wit and a worse temper.
He is really funny, though, Ramesh.
He is. He is really funny. Where he wants to be, but it was fun seeing him not understanding why things were done because he's, you know, his Sri Lankan roots extend as far as Crawley. where he lives. And then you move on, because the response from that, which he actually talks about during the second season, you can tell that he's kind of putting it on. He's kind of proud, but also a little bit bitter at the same time, because the response from the first season was basically, did people say your mum was funnier than you? Yeah, they did. Do people want to see more of your mum on TV than you? Yeah, they do. So the second season is Mum's American Dream, because his mum always wanted to go to America. And so he goes on a trip to America. Another Asian provocateur trip, but BBC have basically said, if you're going to go, you've got to take your mum with you. Now, you all have mothers. Would you go on holiday with your mum?
No.
Like, just my mum?
Yes, just you and your mum on holiday.
No.
I think this is actually a thing on the telly now, because Russell Howard's doing the exact same thing.
Is he?
Mm, Russell Howard and his mum tour with the US, that's what it's called.
Yeah, I didn't know that. US road
trip. Russell is that? Is that the black-haired Russell or the blonde Russell?
Blonde Russell from Good News.
Blonde Russell.
Oh, good, because black-haired Russell's one of the worst comedians in this country.
Russell Cain, is it? Oh. Or whatever his name is.
Yeah, him.
But anyway,
I take offence to calling him a comedian.
He has the best agent in the country, but as an actual comedian, he doesn't deserve that title, as Andrew just said.
Yes. Anyway.
World's Most Punchable Face 2016 Award. Yes, that he deserves.
I thought that was Nigel Farage.
There's distinctions. There's several distinctions.
Ah, right. Several categories for it, yeah. Okay, anyway. So, Mum's American Dream, the first episode, they go out and they meet Cousin Prateep, and that's in Tampa in Florida. And from the beginning of this series, you can tell that Ramesh wants to do the things that he wants to do, but his mom has her own ideas. And she, where in the first series she was, she was kind of an addition to it, this time she knows for definite that she's as much a part of the show as Ramesh is, and she's determined to use that power. So she can actually dictate now where Ramesh is going to go and what he's going to do. It's not simply up to him, because it's his mum. He can't really say anything back to her. And it's just hilarious as you see him going on and on and on all the way through the series, going to meet the relatives in Canada. They're going to the Deep South to meet Ramesh's brother Dinesh and carrying on like that. But then towards the end of the series, there was one bit which really got me, and I almost fell off my chair. I was laughing so much. They meet a bunch of their cousins, an uncle and a bunch of the cousin, in kind of one of these, you know, that scene in Pulp Fiction, you know, in the diner.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the diner with all the music, and then they start dancing. They're in that. They're in that kind of diner, and they meet their cousins, and Ramesh is sitting there, and because all the way through each episode, he goes to a bit where he's talking to camera, just outside of wherever they are. And he says, this, my mum and my uncle have just been sitting in there doing a traditional Asian greeting where they talk for 10 minutes to each other about who's died recently. And I almost fell off my chair, because that's exactly what my mum and all my aunts and uncles do whenever they meet somebody they haven't seen for ages. The first thing they talk about is who's died recently, and that just goes on. And then they'll talk about what's going on in their lives now. I think it's one of those weird Asian things. I'm pretty sure that most Western families don't greet each other with, so, you know, Uncle Patrick died last week, and, you know.
This is a total lost in translation thing, this, because this is just, it's not clicking in any sort of level for me. I'm sorry.
What I'm picking up is it's funny because people die.
But anyway, you know, Ramesh gets to try his hand at all sorts of things, and, you know, he gets to try being a cowboy, he gets to try he's putting on all these weird and wacky costumes as well. And you can tell he's having fun with it, right? Because it's just the way he delivers it. But he's trying to be bad-tempered about things because his mum's with him. But some episodes he fails quite hard. But then you get to the episode where it's him and his uncle. And that episode, that slayed me, absolutely slayed me. Because his uncle has decided that he's going to go with Ramesh to Mexico. And they're going to do all the things in Mexico that his uncle was going to do if Ramesh's dad was alive. The only problem is, something gets a bit lost in translation. And towards the end of the episode, there's this brilliant bit where Ramesh and his uncle go to get this blessing. And they get taken to a male witch, right? And the male witch is they're thinking, oh, right, okay, he's a witch. He looks like a normal guy. He's just wearing this weird getup. And then they start going down into this basement. And then they realize that he's not a witch. He's a Satanist. So they've basically been taken by accident to a Satanist to get a blessing.
As long as it's not down Ducker's Passage to get a blessing, perfectly fine.
Well, okay. Given the size of the tool on the statue of Satan that they had. The thing is, with Asian Provocateur, there are some good points and some bad points to it, especially to the second season. The first season was really good because you got an understanding of Sri Lankan culture from the perspective of a Sri Lankan who doesn't really understand his culture. So it's kind of the outsider looking in, but you got more of a sense of what is part of, or what makes up Sri Lankan culture. But the second season, going out to America, America is a known quantity. And the problem with being a known quantity is that it becomes more difficult to do the comedy.
It's a paid holiday, basically.
Yeah, it's more a paid holiday that just goes wrong. And that's where the comedy falls down a little bit. There are some great moments, there are some surprising moments, and there are some hilarious moments. But Asian Provocateur Season 2, his mum is great, right? His mum is funny because there are things that she's still the outsider looking in. There are a lot of things that she still doesn't understand because she's, you know, she's older. She hasn't been exposed to these sorts of cultural shifts as much as Ramesh has, right? Ramesh Ranganathan is Ramesh Ranganathan. It seems like he doesn't change. He's like one of those boulders that just keeps going and going but doesn't really change shape at all. He's the same at the beginning as at the end. One of the hilarious bits is that his mum wants to be an actress in the final episode, and they basically don't really get any parts, but they decide that they're going to cut a trailer for their own superhero movie. And seeing Ramesh wearing that superhero get-up with his belly is funny, in the way that, it's funny. It just is.
Okay.
It's got good points and bad points. It's one of those things that, you know, if you imagine a holiday, just you going off on a holiday with your mom, and how good or bad that could be, then you'll pretty much get Asian Provocateur Season 2.
Okie doke. All right, I'll close out with a disc that we've been sent over by Eureka, sub-licensed from the BBC. And it's made Marion and Her Merry Men, which has been released in the fall set. And just going to preface this a little bit, I can't lie. Well, for one, it's one of the big fixtures of my childhood as it broadcast between 1989 and 1994. So just on the cusp of me going through, you know, getting up to about 10 years old, that sort of area. So at the time, I didn't really understand it. But now, I didn't understand it and I still loved it. But now going back to it, I can see it for the show that it really is. And I don't think I'm the right person to give it a review because, you know, when you go back to something after such a long time and you realise it's just as good as you remember, if not better. It's such a rare thing because the whole idea of it is, and we've all heard the story of Robin Hood, you know, he robs from the rich, gives to the poor, and Maid Marian is his love interest. She's never really been much more. Well, in this, it takes an approach which has been likened to Red Dwarf, it's been likened to Blackadder, it's been likened to all sorts of iconic sort of 80s and 90s sort of subversive and weird and different sitcoms. And the whole idea is, you know, Maid Marian is Robin Hood, and Robin Hood has been relegated to basically this idiot who's a failed tailor and a bit of a coward. And what I really like about it, though, is it's just weirdly subversive. It's got characters addressing the camera. It's got very modern sort of stylistic things. Danny, hang on, let me get the name right. He plays Cat in Red Dwarf, Danny John Jules. He's always played the idiot, but in this he basically and effectively plays the narrator, Barrington. At the beginning of every episode, he does like a 1980s style hip-hop song, telling you about the situation and where it is, which is like really innovative. Tony Robinson plays the sheriff, who's kind of a lot like Blackadder, the character, but where Blackadder effectively won the day, you know, through his intellect or through, you know, his cunning. Tony Robinson basically loses out because of, you know, who he is, his intellect and his cunning. So it's a nice riff on that character. But it just plays completely. You know, it is a kid's show and it does have things very much of a kid's show. I mean, one of the characters is a play on Little John, who's called Little Ron, and he's an incredibly aggressive midget, is the right word to use? I don't know. But his gag is that he always goes into battle facing the wrong way, which is clearly a thing for kids, because it's the same gag over and over again, so it does kind of grain. Kit Lonergan plays Marion, who's just this very warm presence at the head of it. But the humour is just so weird and diverse. The second episode on the first season has like a bow archery contest, which is very common for sort of things that deal in Robin Hood. But in it, to disguise himself, he's called himself Robert the Incredible Chicken, and he's dressed head to toe in a chicken outfit, Adam Morris. And what follows is an inch-perfect parody of darts coverage on TV, even though it's supposed to take place in sort of 1195.
That's actually pretty great.
So it has this complete sort of modern framing of like a really classic story, and it goes in some really subversive and left-field ways. And like I say, it's everything that I remember it being. It is, honest to God, one of the best British kids' programmes of all time. It gives so much still. It's so many things to pick up from it. It's brilliant. The musical numbers are very inventive. The first episode has a bit about mud being everywhere, and it's just very fun. But yeah, to be honest, it's not going to be bought for kids. This is not a kids thing. This is bought from people of my generation who just want to sort of relive it. And I can report to those people that it still holds up perfectly. It's a warm blanket of nostalgia. Usually nostalgia is a liar. It's a thief, and it's a monster, whispering sweet nothings in your ear when it doesn't mean a single one of them. But in the case of Maid Marian and Her Merry Men, it stands up just as well today. It's wonderful, and get it, introduce your kids to it, they'll love it too, because without this, there wouldn't have been any of the shows that people sort of champion as sort of provocative and family shows like Horrible Histories.
Yeah.
No Maid Marian, no Horrible Histories.
Yeah.
And yeah. I adore this thing. It is my childhood. This in Erie, Indiana, you know, rushed home for school for this stuff.
Don't recommend it then.
Yeah, I'd even recommend it to people who haven't seen it before because it's very cheeky.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah, since me too, since I was a kid and then I watched it back. First episode was largely there, but the second episode was like basically perfect. It's one of those rare occasions where usually you get series that sort of have an escalation of getting better and better and better and better. But this one has like a warm-up episode and then it's perfect, which is incredibly rare, I think. But yeah, Maid Marian, Eureka are putting that out. If you grew up with it like I did, it comes out Monday, which, as recording this, that's the 21st of November. And yeah, rush to your local shop and get it because it is great.
Fantastic. So anyway, I think we're at the end of the show.
Yep, seems like we are.
Right, so I think that's all we have time for then.
Okay.
For On the Box. I should be back again someday when there's some other blast from my childhood.
Back in the dungeon.
Yeah, I'll go back in the dungeon until then, but only when my childhood stuff comes out am I allowed to come out and play. But yeah, this has been On the Box, I guess. I've been Rob.
I've been Andy.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Rob.
The burning train has finally crashed into the station.
Yes. We'll see you all next time.
Thanks for listening.